remember when I started out in my sales career, it took me so long to get to just being a good salesperson. But when you get to good, what do you do next? You get better in order to be the best. I have the perfect roadmap to get you from where you are to best, and it's called Good, Better, Best. Learn the 6 elements to mastering the secret of personal achievement and why you should shift your focus from making money to being the best in the world at what you do. Don't settle for being good. Don't even settle for getting better. Be the best with my free ebook. The link is in the show notes.
And so we weathered that storm, and we really, after Christmas, got the team back together and we started having a lot of success. We had a good team. And that brought us to senior night, which is February 15th. And I gave Jason his uniform on February 13th. It was way too big, but there was a rumor going around school that he slept in it for 2 straight nights.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the world's preeminent sales and personal development podcast. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling, and I wrote the Sales Manifesto.
And I'm John Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. Welcome to Sell or Die.
You're going to have a great time today because we have Coach Jim Johnson, a phenomenal leadership speaker who coached high school basketball for a couple of decades. And you may think he's unremarkable, but every single one of you knows him, especially if you follow any kind of sports. He's the guy who put in his the team manager. The kid is on the autism spectrum, and he ended up being the leading scorer of the game. It was a phenomenal piece, and you're going to absolutely be thrilled not only by that story, but with the other things that Jim Johnson has to say about leadership.
And if you're like me and not into basketball, not into sports, and think that this is about sports, it's really not, guys. This is all about how you can become a better leader and a better person. So it's just a freaking phenomenal episode.
And don't be worried about scrambling for the video. We're going to put it in the show notes, but I have a couple of tissues with you because I promise you it's a crier.
Oh, yeah. So before we get into it, what's going on in your world, Jeffrey?
Well, I am now married.
You are?
Yep.
Oh,
I decided.
Congrats.
Well, thanks.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I married the great Jen Gluckow.
Aw.
I know. And it was a great event, a very family-ish event. Everyone,
it was terrific.
Yeah, it was totally wonderful. And we are now headed to the beach.
Yep. Our dogs walked the rings down the aisle.
Yeah,
well, that
right.
was freaking cool.
Yeah. Well, our dog trainer walked our dogs.
Right,
walked
the, right. Yeah. But in my vision, it was the dogs. I mean, I love Emily. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
She's the greatest.
So, diehards, we're now getting into the dog days of summer.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of dogs. And you may be a whiner instead of a winner.
We want you to be winners.
You're going to talk to me about, well, everyone's on vacation. I can't do anything. First of all, have a book to read. Second of all, take a couple courses yourself. Third of all, quit your complaining. And fourth of all, if all of your customers are at the beach, go to the beach. I think it's a pretty obvious thing. Like, all my customers are at the beach. Great. Set appointments.
I love that.
Buy them a hot dog.
I love that.
Get them a popsicle.
Network and flip-flops.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Sounds like my dream.
Networking
we filmed a video because we were doing that book promotion last week.
Yeah.
So we filmed a video, and I'm looking at the video, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's so real and raw. And Alex and Steve are like, what do you mean? I'm like, look, I'm in socks. Because I barely ever wear shoes around the office.
So, now that you have that visual.
Oh, yeah.
And the promotion's over, by
yeah,
the way.
Sorry. You can't get the books anymore. Yeah. I mean, you can. They're just no longer. We.
So, I'm challenging you, diehards, before we get into this amazing interview, that now is the time for you to intensify, not kick back, intensify your effort to set meetings and make sales so that your summer can turn into summer money.
Ooh.
As opposed to summer do nothing, complain like a three-year-old.
You can become the top dog.
I don't have anything to do. I'm bored. Like, dude, be bored someplace else. Pick up the phone, make 20 calls before you get to work in the morning, and you'll be fine. Meet someone for coffee, and you'll be fine. All right, I'm going to introduce Jim Johnson because I know him and I love him. Coach Jim Johnson Jr. is an amazing human being. He was a high school basketball coach. He knows a bunch of other high school coaches. You may remember him for putting in his team manager, Jason McElwain, also known as J-Mac, who is on the autism spectrum. But in their final home game of 2016, Jason ended up scoring 20 points in the game. He was actually the leading scorer in the game, having entered the game with only 5 minutes left to play. And he became a national phenomenon. After coaching for a decade, Jim Johnson retired to deliver motivational and leadership keynotes across the United States. And I promise you, he has a depth of knowledge that you will love. Please help us welcome the great Coach Jim Johnson. So how are you, James? Where are you today?
I'm in my home in Rochester, New York, in a beautiful 45-degree raining day.
We have an employee from Rochester who continually bitches about it.
At least it's not snowing.
That's true. It did snow in Vermont yesterday, but we've avoided snow anyways.
Tell me, just as a sort of an opening intro thing to our diehards who may not know you, you coaching a basketball team is one thing. Did you play basketball before you started to coach?
I played in high school. I played 1 year in college, and then I actually got cut from my college team, which was very humbling, but also ended up being very beneficial as a coach because I kind of went through all the gamuts. I was a guy that barely made the team early in my life to a guy that was the best player on my high school team to getting cut in college. So I kind of hit all the gamuts. So it helped me with understanding how different players went through those.
Now you get to a point where you have been cut from your team. How'd you become a coach?
Well, my dad was my high school coach. So I always, when I went to college, I thought I was such a good player. I was going to play in the NBA, but then when I got cut from college, I realized that dream wasn't coming through. But I love basketball. So I wanted to stay involved and I found that coaching was a way that I could do that. And I fell in love with it once I started doing it after college.
Are you pals with Jim Boeheim?
I know Jim Boeheim not real well, but I've known him over the years. I've gone to some of their games and practices. Syracuse is about an hour and a half from us.
Yeah, Jim Boeheim, for the unaware, is the coach of Syracuse University, and I think the all-time winningest coach, isn't he? Like 900 wins?
He's actually second behind Coach K, although he had some wins taken away because of some violations.
But really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, imagine a coach with violations.
Shocking.
So there's an event that you are arguably most known for where you played your team manager, Jason McElwain, in your final home game. Can you tell us about Jason and your relationship with him?
10 years ago, February 15th, 2006, when Jason McElwain, a highly functioning autistic teen known by all as J-Mac, left the bench as a student manager for the Greece Athena Varsity in Rochester, New York, and entered the nation's consciousness.
Yeah, Jason came to our program as a sophomore, and he tried out for our team for three consecutive years. I was the varsity coach, so he was our team manager for the JV team, and then he came out his junior and senior year for the varsity team, the team I coached. Jason's on the autism spectrum. He's also learning disabled, and he was very small in stature back in high school. In fact, his senior year, he's probably 5'9", 115 pounds, soaking wet. But Jason had a big heart. And he was so passionate about basketball. And one of my missions was I like to help people make their dreams come true. And so I offered Jason the team manager job his junior and senior year after doing the JVs. And his senior year, because he kept coming to everything, and I just got to the point where I really became attached to him. And I said to his senior year when I was telling him that he was unfortunately not good enough to make the team that I wanted to give him a gift for his loyalty. And that was, I was going to put him in uniform and hopefully get him into our final home game, which we call senior night. And
cool.
Awesome.
First of all, yeah. That's cool as hell. You know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the kid went home.
Yeah.
And whatever he had to do, whoever he had to brag to, whatever the circumstance was, this kid was in hog heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty excited. In fact, I kid people that periodically that year, he would ask me about the uniform. And of course, I define periodically as about every other day. So he was pretty pumped up. Well, the interesting thing, I ended up writing a book about the season because we had so much adversity that year that I nearly resigned. We had a lot of parental issues. But fortunately, with my staff and my family, they said, you know, Jim, you always talk about leadership, but when the tough get going, they don't leave. And so we weathered that storm. And we really, after Christmas, got the team back together and we started having a lot of success. We had a good team. And that brought us to senior night, which is February 15th. And I gave Jason his uniform on February 13th. It was way too big, but there was a rumor going around school that he slept in it for two straight nights.
So this kid's in uniform. He's autistic. He's on the bench.
Right.
He has been a loyal follower of the team since the first day in high school. It's in his last game.
Right.
He's been a manager, never been a player, never dribbled the ball on the court other than practices, I'm sure.
Right.
You put him in, it's a total unknown situation.
Right.
Somebody gives him the ball and he shoots from 3 points, correct?
And first, he makes the 3-point corner.
Yeah. And he makes a shot.
No, the first shot he missed by 6 feet. And that's when I told people that I know you're not supposed to pray in the public schools, but I was praying to God.
Okay, so then
what happened?
Wait, he makes a second shot. I've seen the video 50 times.
But actually, the second shot is not on any of the videos. He actually misses a short shot from about 10 feet, but he at least hit the rim. So I was thinking to myself, God must be listening to me because we're closer. And then his third possession, he actually had another 3-pointer, and that's when he made his first shot. And I thought to myself, God must be a basketball fan. Not only has he scored, he's got a 3-pointer. It can't get better than this.
Oh, man.
And the next 3 minutes, as I kid people, he turned into his boyhood idol, Kobe Bryant, and he started making shot after shot. And to take you through the last minute, the two things I'll never forget, with about a minute to go, I'm still sitting on the bench, which I rarely done, but I was so overwhelmed with emotion. Tears were still rolling down my face. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I get a tap on my shoulder and I look behind me and it's Jason's mother and she's bawling her eyes out. Gives me a big hug. And she whispers in my ear, Coach, this is the best gift you could ever give my son. Of course, what did I do? I cried harder.
Yeah, of course.
And then how the game ends is Spencer Porter, our opponent that night. And I want to give kudos to their team and their coach. They're great sports that night. They score with about 10 seconds to go. And this is literally the truth. Our player takes it out and normally throws it to our point guard, but this time he throws it right to J-Mac. And J-Mac's dribbling down, the clock's kicking down. And I'm thinking, oh, he's just going to go in for a layup. Oh, no. He stops like 2 feet behind the 3-point line, almost an NBA three, and he lets it go. And I'm thinking, Jason, don't shoot for this way too far. He launches a rainbow. It swishes. Yeah. I look over. Our student body runs on the floor. Our players run on the floor. And then Jason's mother runs on the floor. The little lady, she's like 5'2", 100 pounds, and she bobs through everybody, gives him a big hug. And then our players put him up on his shoulders, and he's got the game ball under his head. And I have no idea how many points he had scored. And our public address announcer comes on and says, the leading scorer for the Trojans tonight, J-Mac, with 20 points. And I start laughing. I think, if he'd have played the whole game, he would have scored 160.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was...
That's incredible.
It's hard to watch that video and not cry. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I've seen it hundreds of times, and I still cry.
Yeah.
What were you expecting before you put him on?
Well, the two things. First of all, the really neat thing, as I mentioned, that we had had a lot of struggles during the season. So we really kept preaching what a team was all about. And those players that were on the floor when Jason came on showed the essence of teamwork, because he was the only one that shot in the last 4 minutes. They kept passing the ball. In fact, I still kid Jason because I see him all the time. I'm still looking for your first assist because he never passed the ball.
That's funny.
The thing I was really hoping is I wanted to get him in with enough time so he could score a basket. I thought if he scored a basket, that's a memory he'll cherish for the rest of his life.
That's so cool. I mean, obviously, it's a leadership decision, and which you took and succeeded with. It could have gone any which way.
Right.
This kid has memorialized himself, the school, the team, you. And everybody, it was his mom and dad. I mean, it was an unbelievable event that just sort of materialized. It wasn't something where you practiced it. Like, you know, when you get the ball to here, you shoot. No, he didn't.
I mean, it was definitely a leadership position to take, but it also seems like it was a risk because it could have cost you the game. So how did you battle that in your mind to make that decision?
Well, to me, it was just the right thing to do because of all his loyalty to our program. And I believe the team felt the same way. And although there's always a risk that, you know, he could have fallen right on his face, I just, in my mind, I was like, you know what, Jason deserves this chance. And I wanted to give him that opportunity. And if he failed, he failed. In fact, I kid people because one of the things we always talked about with our team is what we call next play, where when we make a mistake, you know, in basketball, the game's so fast, you know, you don't have time to, you know, pout and so you just move on. And the great illustration, Jason, what he absorbed from all our teachings was when he missed that first shot, he missed by a mile. I mean, it was a ball. It didn't bother him. It didn't faze him. Hey, next play. He moves on and, you know, misses the second shot, but then he makes one. And then after that, as he says, he got hot as a pistol and the rest is.
Wow.
Do you, let's talk about you as a coach, because you had the balls to put him into the game to begin with. Take the risk of every kind of criticism on the planet, but that really, I don't ever think that even fazed you when you, you know, who's going to say it's right, who's going to say it's wrong. And then you go and talk about it when you give speeches now. You're a professional speaker as well as a former professional or former paid coach in high school.
Right.
What do you talk about? Well, how do you let people, what's the analogy between between J-Mac and your speech lessons?
Well, I do two primary keynotes. The first one that I started about a month after that game, when people started asking me, I developed a talk called Dreams Really Do Come True, because I think everybody has dreams, but I believe most people don't believe they can come true. And so what I do is I illustrate in that talk is I share, you know, the trials and tribulations of what Jason went through and talked about some things that I observed, you know, through my own personal growth and observing Jason and other players over my 30-year career as a head coach. And, you know, so some of the things I talk about is, you know, where do you find your passion? How to discover that? Because Jason and I both had a great passion for basketball, and that gave us an opportunity, because I believe when you are passionate about something, you usually get pretty good at it because you love it and you feel like work. The next thing is, you know, is really understanding what your primary mission of life. And when I figured that out, because I also do a leadership talk, is I developed my own personal mission statement. And that was to be an outstanding role model that makes a positive difference in the world by helping others make their dreams come true. And when I gained clarity about who I was, that helped me become a better leader because my players knew what I stood for and what I was all about. And then, of course, we developed the team mission from that. And then the third thing is that we taught our players, we spent a lot of time on goal setting, on how to, you know, I do a whole goal setting workshop now that I share with companies and students and staff of educational groups. But, you know, I really talk about, you know, writing your goals down, how to write them specific. You know, we would give them cards that they should read in front of a mirror. And we just spent a lot of time on clarity, is, you know, because you can't hit a target you don't have. And that really helped us in our program, both individually and as a team, because we did team goals and individual goals. And that's one thing as a leader, I think it's important, not only you have team goals, but you have clarity on what your individual people, what their goals are and how they fit into the team. And if you don't know that as a leader, I think that can really hurt you. And then for Jason, the great illustration that I emphasize in my first talk is perseverance, the ability to find a way no matter what, and no matter what thinking. And, you know, and the fact that, as I said, Jason missed his first shot badly, missed the second shot, but that wasn't going to faze him. And just the fact that, you know, because people ask me, why did you put him in the game? You know what? Because he deserved the chance because he was so loyal and committed. People don't realize it. I had seen him play hundreds of times because he kept coming to all our offseason stuff. And, you know, he was like a second son to me. I mean, I was picking him up and bringing him there. And it was really just special. And then the next one I talk about is carpe diem, which of course means to seize the day. And I always talk to people about things you can control. Are you effective in things you control? And I always bring up attitude and work ethic with that. And then the last one is how to be an effective team player. What our philosophy was, we over me. And that, we spent a lot of time on that. And as I said, we showed the essence of that night with the fact that, you know, all our players passed Jason the ball. And ironically, at that point in my life, we had never won what we call a sectional tournament, our postseason tournament. And for the first time in my career, we ended up winning it that year.
Wow.
And ironically, Jason came back and helped me my last 9 years, and we won four more together. So as I kid people, for a small fee, I will run them out to you.
Hey, everybody. This is Gina Tremarco.
And Rachel Tipton.
And we are
Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the new podcast that does what?
Make sales sexy again.
What's this podcast about, Rachel?
It's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks. And it's filled with laughter, random chatter, practical advice, and some serious stuff.
It's not just for women, though, right?
No, it's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks for men and for women.
Listen to us on the Sell or Die Network,
womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, and anywhere that you can find podcasts. And
be sure to subscribe, comment, share our podcast, and give us a review. Tune in and listen to
Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again.
You've been warned.
Hey, I want to go back. That was an amazing list of things. And I want to go back to the first thing you said, which was about how you gained clarity personally for what you wanted and what was important to you. How can our diehards gain their own clarity? What are some of the activities or exercises you did to really figure out what mattered to you?
Well, I started to do a lot of reading. So I think the most effective thing as a person, as a leader, is you got to keep growing. And so to answer your question specifically, when I started to realize that first of all, I think you got to answer this question. Why were you put on this earth? Or if you believe in God, why did God put you on this earth? I happen to believe in God. So that's the question I try to answer. And to do that, the first thing I did is I started to list what were my most important values. And for me, my most important value was integrity. I wanted to be someone that people thought of, when they thought of integrity, they thought of me. Number two is I wanted to be a great role model for the people that I worked with. You know, I worked with students a lot, but also my staff and my family. And the third thing is I wanted to help others. I wanted to create value to help them have their dreams come true. And when I started to figure out what my purpose was, and put it in writing, because it's funny, because when I talk to a lot of audiences now, and I'll ask them, how many have a personal mission statement in writing?
Almost nobody.
I get a lot of blank stares. And so, but I think that changed my life dramatically as a person and as a leader, because I knew who I was. And then, of course, you're trying to live that on a consistent basis, which, I try to do. I've certainly have had my faults with that.
Wow, that's cool. Thank you for digging in deeper to
totally
that.
Totally, thanks for that. And, you know, it's so interesting. You have all this wisdom and you have all this brilliance, but that kid helped launch your career.
He sure did, absolutely.
And, I mean, just to think of the people who would have missed your message of brilliance if it wasn't for that kid tagging on the court and knocking down a bunch of threes.
Yeah. I mean, I think God does things for certain reasons.
Yeah.
Because I had gotten really big in my personal growth. And when I started to, listen to speakers like Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar, I was like, you know what? Maybe I could do that someday. And then all of a sudden,
exactly.
Jason and
that's so cool.
I was able to do that.
So apart from the J-Mac story, you are actually known for taking losing teams and losing programs and turning them into winners.
Right.
And so I'm curious to know, when you join an organization that's losing, what are some of the things you do to help them turn around? Because I think a lot of our diehards can relate to this when they're behind in quota, or they feel like they're down, like not exactly where they need to be. How do they get back to where they need to be? And then, even greater than that, how do they achieve success from that?
Right. So I think the first thing, anytime that I came into a losing situation, was I did three times in my career where the program was in bad shape. The first thing is we had to have clarity of what I would share was my mission, and then we would work on what the team mission was. And what we developed was we wanted to develop winners on and off the court. And we explained to them what we meant by winning on the court, not just the scoreboard, although that was part of it, and what it means to win on off the court, being a great student, being an excellent citizen, those types of things. So that was the first thing. And the second thing is anytime you're in a troubled organization, trust is a huge factor. So I knew that immediately I had to come in and build trust. And that takes time. So I would spend a lot of time, and there are three keys we focused on building trust. Number one is that we were going to do what we say and say what we do. And I always give the illustration, our teams would practice sometimes before school, much to the dismay of my players. They don't like getting up that early. But if we said we're going to meet at 6 a.m., and then a player came in at 6:05, what would that do? Because I called trust like building a savings account.
Yeah.
And if you continue to build the account, you got to keep putting deposits, not take withdrawals. And so I share that illustration. And if they come in late, that's going to hurt the account some, although I don't think it would shatter it. And then the second thing is we always really focused on telling each other the truth. As the Bible says, the truth will set you free. And I always focused on a lot of individual talks with players so that I could find out what made them tick, build the relationship stronger. And then the third thing I did as a leader is I try to focus on catching people doing the right thing as opposed to always trying to focus on the wrong thing. As a leader, you must critique. That's part of the job. But really try to change the mindset. Doing that, I always said to our players that you're always on stage. And I would, many years I did this. I would get in front of them after the team was chosen, and I would bring their parents in, and I would tell them that I'm not going to drink alcohol during the season. And I said, I don't have to do that. I'm legal in drinking age, but I want to be a role model for your sons. But I said, in building trust, it takes time to build trust, but you can destroy it with one bad choice. Well, let's say that 2 weeks after I said that I'm not going to drink alcohol, I get pulled over for DWI. What do you think that would have done to the trust?
Yeah. Over.
Not good.
Over.
Exactly. Never would have gotten it back. Now, fortunately, I stuck to my words and I never drank during the season. But those are the things that we really spent a lot of time building trust. And when we started to build that, I think that's one of the things that helped through our real difficult year with Jason's senior year, is because we had built a lot of trust. And even though it took some time to get it back because we had some issues, because the foundation was there, we were able to reorganize the team and get it going in the right direction. The next thing I talk about is that I think leaders that are effective are always trying to find a way to create an edge for your organization. And some of the things I talk about in that is how to be an effective goal setter, how to use other voices. I think it's important to bring in other people. In basketball, we always used to bring in a strength coach. I think that was really an important thing. So just find ways that you can create an edge for your organization. The fourth thing is being an effective communicator. And again, we did a lot of individual and team meetings. And the best thing that you could say, I always tell people that I think it's important that you can inspire people by being a good public speaker. But I think the most important thing of communication is being an effective listener. And I think we forget that, the old adage, we have two ears and one mouth. We should listen twice as much as we talk. The fifth one is a simple one, but I always talk about it because I say that we are always on stage is lead by example. And actually, this is where I was slipping in my career because we kept losing in our postseason tournament until Jason's senior year. And I realized what the difference was is in the postseason, I was a different coach. I was really harsh on them. I was short-tempered. And it's because I was putting so much pressure on myself to win the big one, as we say, that I realized that I had to lead by example when the going got tough. And that was the biggest change I made Jason's senior year, is I was going to handle the pressure better. I was going to be more positive in difficult times. And we had two pressure-packed semifinal and final games that year that we ended up winning because of my change of example. And then the last two, because I get asked this a lot in leadership, is, coach, how do you get to the top, which I think is a process, and I gave you some ideas on that. But I think the most difficult question is, how do you stay at the top? Because in my career, in my last 11 years in coaching, after never making the finals once, we made it 8 times and won 6.
Wow.
And I really believe that came down to having a leadership philosophy that I was going to keep growing as a leader, because I think effective leaders, I keep growing. I'm an avid reader. I do a book recommendation every week. Jeffrey Gittermer's books have hit that a few times.
And I've
read well over 1,000 books on success and leadership because those are the things I love to learn about. And I think that because I kept growing, and my leadership philosophy is what we call leave a profit, which simply meant that I wanted to turn everything we touch to gold, not garbage, or in other words, to make it better, not worse. And I always give the illustration, we would bring our team to an opponent's school, and I always share to our players, we want to leave the locker room in better shape than we left it before we got there. And I when I walk in, if I saw a piece of garbage on the locker room floor, I would pick it up because I'm trying to lead by example and to really show that leadership philosophy. And then the last thing that I've spent a lot of time that I think helped immensely in my last decade of my career was becoming a better servant leader. And that's the leadership philosophy, where how can I serve the people I work for as opposed to boss them around? Mm. When I changed that mindset, and we spent a lot of time with our leaders on our team, I think the essence of leadership is when you can develop other leaders. And I give you an example. My assistant coach that was with me for 16 years that took over the program when I retired 3 years ago has taken our team to the finals 3 straight years.
Cool.
It took me over 20 years before we get the first one. And I think that's because he had really spent a lot of time, and I mentor him, and it's a really powerful thing. If you, as a leader, you can leave that situation better where you've developed the leadership, then you've done something special. And that's where you leave a legacy.
I think one of the most easily takeaway things for every one of you diehards right now is what Jim Johnson did. He coached himself. He coached himself first so that he could coach others second and did a better job of it. He remained a student coach during the 30 years that he was an actual coach.
Well said, Jeffrey.
Yeah, no problem, Jenny. there's a couple of other things, though. Jim Rohn always said, leave a profit. Let the other guy have a little bit more. So I'm guilty. I turn lights off in hotel rooms. I'll try to make things just a little bit better when I leave the room, because he has instilled that guilt in me. But it's also an awareness.
Right.
If you pick up after yourself or you are aware of the other person's situation, you can make their life just a tiny, tiny bit better, but they will notice it.
Yeah.
And they will appreciate it.
Yeah, they will 100% notice it.
I want to ask you, have you ever seen the John Wooden coaching film where he's showing people how to do the weave and he leads it from the top of the key, bouncing basketballs left and right?
I have not seen that. John Wooden was one of the people that I admired, and I've read a lot of his books, but I have not seen that video.
You should check it out. It's absolutely unbelievable. I lived in Indiana for a while. Right next to the town where he played basketball at Martinsville High School. He went to Purdue and Martinsville High School.
Yep.
And there's pictures of him sitting with a bunch of other guys from the 20s, literally. Wow. And when I saw that picture of the of him training the UCLA players, he focused on fundamentals.
Yes.
There wasn't one fancy thing that this guy ever mm-hmm. acknowledged or did. And as a result of it, you know, 9 straight NC2A championships, which is not bad.
No, he was pretty good.
So before you go, you have a book out now. It's called A Coach and a Miracle. Can you tell us what we should expect when we dive into that book?
Well, you're going to hear the behind the scenes of what happened that season. And then I bring it out and I talk about some of the keys that we talked about, some of the things that I learned through my coaching career, as well as that season in helping us, you know, turn that season around, number one. And then I actually did an updated where I did an additional epilogue, which kind of culminated my career when I finished my career and talked about some of the different things that we did to keep it going after Jason's magical night and our run to the sectional.
So that was pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
I thought that he was... First of all, I only knew him as the guy that put the autistic kid into the game. And, you know, I reached out to him immediately after that and told him how amazing I thought that was, because I know an autistic child and I realized what the value of him being treated as a normal kid.
Yeah.
And Jim Johnson just absolutely lit it up. He took a huge risk. I mean, it has never been done before. The kid's not even on the team.
Well, he didn't even just risk the team winning or losing the game.
He didn't care about that, yeah.
He risked his reputation. It ended up being an amazing thing for him,
yeah.
Right? And a life-changing move for him. But he took that risk, for sure.
As a leader, he took the risk.
Now, there's something he said that I really, really liked. He said, building trust is like building a savings account where you keep putting in deposits. But if you're, you know, you're supposed to be there at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. and every day you're putting in your deposits, you're arriving at 6 a.m., you're arriving at 6 a.m., maybe you're arriving at 5:59, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And then that one day you arrive at 6:05 a.m.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so hard to, you've taken such a big step back.
Yeah, I don't know that the time analogy would be the one where I would take the big step back. But I think if let's look at our things here. If we're performing and we're performing every week like clockwork and then we miss a performance because something happened, I think that's a step back.
Yeah, I mean.
Or maybe the guy doesn't show up on time, like 3 hours late.
Right, exactly. And then it happens again, and then it happens again.
Yeah,
you don't just gain it back with one for one, okay? You might have to put in 10 more deposits to gain that one mess up back. And so I really liked the analogy to a savings account. I thought that was really cool. He also said, you can't hit a target you don't have. And I wonder how many of you diehards have, obviously you have your quota target, but do you have daily targets? Do you have daily goals that you need to hit? Do you have maybe hourly goals that you need to hit? This is my time block for doing my calls. Well, what calls? How many calls? Did you already do the research? You know, what does that look like? What are your targets and how well are they defined?
And do you have a bullseye somewhere in your office to where you can see that you need a target on an everyday basis? And in the center of the bullseye, in the center of the target, you put 100 calls or you put whatever whatever your number is for that day, so that you constantly see the target, not just implement.
Yeah.
I think that's an important part of the process. Do you have other things you want to talk about, Coach Johnson?
I pulled out a lot of notes from him. Like he really talked about the essence of leadership is, you know, just when you can create other leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to be an amazing leader, are you creating other leaders? Is it, you don't even need to be a defined sales leader by your company, where you're creating other salespeople, just by getting the sale, you might be leading. You might be leading your customers and turning them into other leaders. So just think about that. Are you creating other leaders, other people that are following your lead?
Yeah. The one thing that I wanted to talk about on top of your piece about risk is he didn't just take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
He created a moment.
Yes.
And that moment will live literally way longer than he will. People have watched that video millions of times.
Oh, yeah.
And they will continue to watch that video millions of times long after Jim Johnson has passed on.
Yes.
Like, he'll be in heaven watching people watch the video. Or when they get there, he'll say, hey, do you watch the video? And they go, yeah, we watched the video 10 times and cried. I've watched the video 10 times myself. I try to watch it every once in a while just because it's so damn cool to see this kid come in. Anyway, I've had a couple of incidents with an autistic child, and I will tell you, when they get what they're hoping for, it's life-changing for them. I want to harken back to a time, and I don't know if we have the music or not, but when I was in the grade school, I went to summer camp every year. And the owner of our camp was a guy named Harry Litwack, who just happened to be the coach of Temple University's basketball team, one of the winningest coaches at that time of all time. And Uncle Harry, as we called him, would come to our home to recruit us for summer camp every year. So I gathered all my buddies around the court and said, hey, Uncle Harry's coming. He's the coach of Temple. He's going to show us cool stuff. Come on, you guys. Let's get down to the basketball court and meet Uncle Harry. Now, I'm in the fifth grade. So you can just guess my age. I'm 11 or 12 years old. And Uncle Harry comes, and he's like this short guy, 5'5", and about the same width. And he's smoking a cigar that's so damn big that he has to put his hand around the cigar. He can't, like, put his two fingers into it. He drops the cigar to the ground. He stands under the basket. All the kids are surrounding him, and he looks over at one kid who has a ball. He goes, give me that ball. And the kid bounces him the ball, and he turns around, and he shoots a layup. He said, you see that shot? 99% of all basketball games are won with that shot. Don't miss it. And he walks off the court. And I'm going, wait a second. You didn't show us anything. I felt cheated that day. But 30 years later, I realized that that was probably as valuable a lesson as I ever received, because all he did was say, 99% of games are won with this one thing. It's fundamental.
Yeah.
Don't miss the fundamental shot that will win you the game.
Yeah,
and
sure.
If you look at the players of today, the layup and the dunk are two of the most powerful pieces of information. And interestingly, I wrote about it, and some guy wrote me a letter saying, thanks a lot. I'm a high school coach myself, and I wonder how many of my players missed two-footers that cost us the game.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Diehard, if you're wondering what the hell this has to do with for you, because you don't play basketball.
Some do.
Okay, but you're not competing, most likely, in the game of basketball. You're competing in the game of sales.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same exact thing. You need to master the fundamentals of selling. And so many people come to me and say, Jen, I need to know all the secrets to making sales. What are the secrets? And it's like, you better get those fundamental things down first.
Ask emotional questions.
Yeah,
right.
Ask emotional questions. Walk in with the right attitude. Have your beliefs straight. You know, be able to close and ask for the sale.
Take your value proposition and stuff it up your marketing department's rear end and walk in with a valuable idea. If you do those fundamental elements, if you prepare the night before rather than on the way,
mm-hmm.
you're going to impress your customer to a point when he or she knows that you are ready for this, that you have engaged them in a way that's both powerful and profitable for them. You're going to walk away with the business.
Yeah, there's another fundamental that J-Mac, you know, the kid who coached Jim Johnson put in, that J-Mac practiced. And, you know, when you were talking about the video, the coach said that there's actually a piece that they didn't show in the televised piece, but that happened in the game, which was that J-Mac missed the first shot or two.
Yeah, they show the first shot that he missed, but they don't show the second shot that he missed.
Okay, so what happens when you miss a shot? What happens when someone says no to you? And how well or not do you recover?
Right, he kept shooting.
Right,
You ask any great shooter how they get back their game, they say, I just keep shooting.
Yeah.
And this,
but they don't let it impact their mindset. They don't say, "Well, oh shit, I missed the last one."
Yeah, I hope
so
I don't miss the next one.
Right? No, they're just focused on making the next one, just like you need to be focused on making that next sale.
They're bearing down. They don't quit. They don't give up. They don't get down on themselves. They don't blame other people. They take responsibility. They focus. They concentrate, and they shoot.
Until all next right. time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Sell or die hard. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.